Those ubiquitous surveys.
Okay.
Good, do anything without
good evening. Welcome, everyone. We are here on part three of electricity on Shabbat, and there will be a part four.
Good.
So what, just to do some recap of what we've done in the past, part one we talked about the concept of what is work, malacha, and in part two we really took a deep dive into the categories of work, which we will see again tonight. I won't go over every one now because we will see it. So just to review, there are 39 categories of malacha, of work. These categories are derived from the building of the Mishkan, and they don't always mean what you think they mean, which is what we covered last time. And basically, it's a malacha. A work has four characteristics. It is purposeful. It is positive, meaning you're constructing something rather than destroying something. It is intentional, you have kavanah, and it is inevitable, even if unintentional. And there we had the famous example of Psek Resha, the chicken head, which is, your son wants to play with a chicken head on Shabbat, I'm not making this up, and you have to cut the head off the chicken to give it to him. Now, it's not your intention to kill the chicken, but you kill the chicken, and you have committed a malacha inadvertently. So, we talked about there are Torah laws versus rabbinic laws. Rabbinic laws are always more lenient. And something we'll talk a lot about tonight, Shabbat versus Yom Tov. And finally, thank you, there are indirect actions called grama, which is like setting a timer, something you don't do purposefully. Okay, I'm not going to go into all the details of malacha because we have much to study. So I'll talk for a minute about tshuvot, and the conservative and the orthodox movement both work on a very old Jewish practice of called tshuvot, which means answers. It's called responsa, and the way is questions are submitted, and bodies of legal decisors, rabbis, poseks, get together, they research an issue, and they come up with an answer. Reform does not do this. It's not an insult on Reform. It's just, this is the way they work. And tonight we're going to cover the famous tshuva that's written in modern times called The Use of Electricity on Shabbat and Yom Tov. This is kind of the orthodox standard for the use of electricity on Shabbat, and I have digested it and put it into a form that I hope is understandable.
Who wrote it?
It is written by two rabbis, Michael Broidy and Howard Yachter. Pass that out.
The conservative one also.
What, next week we'll do the conservative one. And anyone's free to, I can send it to you or you can take a copy.
Thank you.
Whatever.
Next week or in 2 weeks?
2 weeks. 2 weeks. So I want to make two crucial points before we start, and we'll get into nitty-gritty details here. And the 2 points are this. Number one, electrons flowing through a wire is not fire. That's a rhyme. Very important to know. So the act of a current flowing in and of itself is not electricity. Okay? Number two crucial point, and this is more crucial, it's crucialer. Forget what you think about what is work in the human sense of exertion and doing stuff and so on. Very important. To determine if something is violative of Shabbat, is malacha, is work, you have to look through the lens of the 39 malachot, the 39 labors. So, again, the famous example is, it's Shabbat, I can lift my sofa and carry it from the attic to the basement, and that is not work because I am not violating one of the 39 malachot. But if I step out of my doorway with a handkerchief in my pocket, I have now done the malacha of carrying, and I am liable for the death penalty. So, very important thing. So the question you always have to ask yourself for anything we do is, how is this a malacha? not what does my intuitive sense say, is this a labor or not? Got that? Okay. So we start off with the opening paragraph from the Tshuva. The article surveys Halakha's response to one of the technological breakthroughs of the last 150 years, the invention of electricity. In particular, it explores Halakha's understanding of the use of electricity on Shabbat and Yom Tov within the rubric of prohibited work. So,
Steve, what year was that written?
This was written, I don't have a date on it, but it's relative, it's probably written in the last 20 years.
Okay.
So it's relatively recent. And realizing that a tshuva that dates from the year 1000 is completely valid and kosher in this world.
No, I understand that.
I understand. No, it's important, and I was just going to make that point that just from this opening statement, first of all, electricity is relatively new, Jewishly, right? So there's really no background for figuring out about electricity. Second thing, you will see here that they're enforcing that it's only within the rubric, with so what I just said, it's through the lens, I like to think of it, of what is malacha. And that's how they're judging it. And you'll see in 2 weeks' time, when we talk about the conservative movement, they have another really big area that's kind of missing from this. And I'll just leave that as a teaser to draw you back for the next time. Okay. So with that, we're going to cover all things electrical, lights, appliances, timers, etc. And we'll start off with the biggie, which is incandescent lights. And I looked up the definition of incandescent, which I didn't know before. And it is the emission of light caused by heating a filament. Very, very important. So you all know what that means. There's no need to go into that, but we're not talking about neon lights, which we will. We're not talking about LED lights, which we will. We're talking strictly about these kind of lights, he said, pointing to the overhead lights, where there's a thin wire and it gets heated up and it glows. Okay. So, because it's Talmud class, we'll start with some Talmudic sources. And we have confusion. We have the first section from the Babylonian Talmud, from Shabbat. A kettle which was removed from the fire. One may not pour cold water into it so that it should warm up, but one may pour it, water that is, into a cup in order to temper it. So what is it saying? If you have an empty pot that is hot and you pour water into it, the water heats up. This is cooking. This is forbidden. Bishul is one of the categories, cooking, of which we will see much of. Number two, what if the opposite situation, you pour hot water into an empty metal cup to temper it? And tempering, or scientifically annealing, is when you take hot metal and plunge it into cold, and that makes it stronger. I don't know what chemical process is. I have not investigated that.
It's called annealing.
I said that. Okay, let's continue on with that. So now from another, that was the Mishnah, I'm sorry. Now comes the Talmud. Rav said, they taught that it is permitted only to temper the water, but if it is to harden the metal, it is forbidden. Okay, so pouring the water into the hot pot is okay if you don't do it to harden the metal. But if you do it to harden the metal, it's forbidden.
Which is, as long as it's kept off the fire.
Yeah, forget about the fire. Well, the heat now is only the pot.
Right, you took the hot pot off the fire and it's sitting there hot, still hot, you pour the water into it.
Yeah.
What if you're doing it to make the water warm?
You can't do that. You're heating the water, and that's cooking.
Okay.
Not allowed.
No, it says to temper. It's permitted only to temper the water. So you're
right.
So if you have a hot pot, and you take it off the fire. So now you just have hot metal. you pour water, cold water into that, that water will heat up, and that's okay.
No, that's case one, and that's forbidden.
But here
we're talking about case two, where it's hot water into an empty metal cup.
It's permitted only to temper the water.
Yeah, the wording says to temper the water.
I really don't know what it means to temper water. I wonder if that's a typo.
Because I thought it meant to warm up the water.
Yeah, when you cook.
I took it to mean it was to cool down the water.
Yeah, no, it's to temper the when you're cooking. If you have sauce and you want to thicken it with the roux, you temper the roux by taking some of the hot water out and adding it to the flour to heat the flour up before you throw it into the pot. That's tempering. It's raising the temperature of the cold by adding something hot.
So is there something wrong with the wording?
I mean, as I'm reading this...
But it's slowly.
It's a slow process.
If you pour it all in...
Right. So this pot, the pot is now hot, but it's not on the fire. If it was on the fire, you couldn't put cold water in because that's cooking. Because you're adding heat constantly. But when you have the pot is hot and you throw water in, the heat from the pot will...
Cook the water.
Will heat the water, but it's not cooking because the pot will get colder.
No, it's the water, though, that presents the violation.
But you're not cooking because you're not adding heat at the same time.
Don't get confused. Adding heat is actually a separate category, which we will also see tonight.
So the problem is with the wording and the way this reads.
Yeah.
Because it says to temper the water.
The problem is with the wording, so let's just go right to the... Because there's more of it to read here, and I truthfully don't want to get bogged down in this. What I want to point out of all of this is Rav is affirming that you cannot temper metal on Shabbat. And that's what the point of all of this is. He backtracks a little with it. Finally, another section of the Talmud, Yevamot. And this is, you're wondering what this is doing here in the tractate devoted to the levirate marriage. It's a good question. I don't know. Talmud's all over the place. Granted, however, that according to the view of Rabbi Yossi, might it not be suggested that Rabbi Yossi said the kindling of a fire on the Sabbath is mentioned separately in order to indicate that it is a mere prohibition, in the case only of ordinary burning. The burning by the Beit Din, however, is surely a case of boiling of the metal bar. Concerning which Rav Sheshet said, there is no difference between the boiling of a metal bar and the boiling of dyes. What's this all about? What this is about is, we go back to cooking as one of the bishul, as a forbidden melacha, right? All these forbidden melachot are derived, and this is what we spent last session on at length, about the building of the Mishkan. So, in the Mishkan, what did they cook in effect? It's not about what you think about cooking food, and this is, again, what I mean about looking through the rabbi's eyes. Dyes were cooked to build the Mishkan, and that's where Bishul cooking is derived from. And what he is saying here, that is certainly forbidden. So boiling dye is forbidden, and the point of this sugya in the Talmud is to say that boiling a metal bar is the same thing. So the act of kindling a fire, mavir, as we will see, heating a metal bar is also mavir. And now you see where we're getting to the light. And that's what all of these things are for. Okay, last section here. And this is the Mishneh Torah, so this is from Maimonides, writing in 1100, his digest of the laws of the Talmud. And he says, a person who kindles even the smallest fire, and this is from, of course, his section on Shabbat, is liable, meaning he's guilty, provided he needs the ash that it creates. However, should a person kindle a fire with destructive intent, he is not liable, for he is causing ruin. Okay, so two things here. The malacha of kindling, of burning. The reason it is a malacha is not because of the making the fire in and of itself. It's because in those days, they used it to make charcoal. So they lit something, it burned, and then they collected the ash and made charcoal out of it. That's the malacha of lighting a fire. We learned last time also that when you did something destructively on Shabbat, which is contradictory to common sense, that's okay. Because in effect, you're not doing it for a purpose.
Is it assumed you made
if you destroy, we did this example of if you destroy a shed because you want to build a new shed, that's a malacha, that's building. But if you destroy the shed because you just want to do it for fun, that's technically not a malacha. Right?
Destructive.
Okay.
But destructive is okay.
Yeah.
But what's important here, well, let's read the last line. Similarly, a person who lights a candle or wood, whether to generate warmth or light, is liable. Now, sounds like we have someone else. That will be Michelle. Okay. What's important, Michelle? What's important is what I just told you about lighting a fire for the sake of the ash is the malacha, but Rambam is actually expanding that definition, and this is very typical of Maimonides, where he'll take something out of the Talmud and he'll add something in that may or may not be justified, and he sneaks it in and it becomes the law. So you'll notice he added the second category of people who light things to generate warmth or light, right? That's not a malacha technically, but Maimonides is saying it is.
Because it's purposeful and constructive.
He doesn't really say. See, he begins with the right halacha about making the fire for the need for the ash, but then he goes on to add a person who puts a fire in for constructive activity, to generate warmth, or to cook. And there's no requirement here that someone wants the ash. Finally, if you turn the page over, this is the last part of Maimonides. A person who heats iron in order to strengthen it by submerging it in water,
right,
tempering/annealing, is liable for performing a derivative of the forbidden labor kindling. So, derivative, if you'll remember back again, we talked about avot and toldot, primary categories and secondary categories. He's calling it a derivative, which means a secondary category. And kindling, mavir, burning, that's the primary malacha. So, what do we get out of this? Rambam's ruling is that heating up a metal bar is kindling. Now, when you study Mishneh Torah, this is one of the fascinating things of Judaism, Rambam had, in his day, severe critics, one of which was called the Ravad, the Ra'avad, known colloquially as the Ravid, who is Rabbi Abraham of Paskier, who hated Maimonides, and his commentary is enshrined in the Mishneh Torah.
Is it French, Paskier?
Pardon me? And he will say, like, you old goat, you're completely wrong about this, and da-da-da-da. And he's in there. So the Ravad disagrees. And he says that heating up a metal bar until it glows is not kindling. It's either cooking, bishul, or, we learned another category, makeb batish, the final hammer blow. That's the final act of completion of something to make it a finished product. Again, of which you will hear more. So, those are both malachot. So, all of them are malachot, but there's implications depending on which one you choose, and we will see that again. So, commentaries say, it's only a prohibition if your intent is to heat the metal bar only. Generation of heat and light is incidental. This is a third opinion of what the malacha is. And this is a minor opinion, and this is rejected by most decisors, right? So there's three things here. It's mavir, it's kindling. What do you prefer, kindling or burning? I don't want to confuse people. I'll say kindling. Number two, it's cooking or hammer blow. Or number three, it's none of those. Those are the three choices. So whether you take the Rambam or the Ra'avad, all authorities agree that turning on an incandescent light is a biblical prohibition. It's a malacha. Most agree it's kindling. But there's a minor opinion that says it's either bishul, cooking, or makeh b'patish, final hammer blow. We got that? Everyone's good on that? That's number one primary. This is why, if you're Orthodox or if you're sometimes conservative, you can't turn an incandescent light on Shabbat.
It's cooking.
But don't they not use any electricity?
We'll get there.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. We're starting off the small category to the big.
Mm-hmm.
And I'll actually tip my hat here and tell you this is probably the only sure thing in everything we're going to discuss, because everything here is disputed and argued about. Yes, Stu, you're confused.
I'm very confused. Okay, cooking? Well, it wouldn't be a kneeling. It wouldn't be temporary. Because it doesn't strengthen. It doesn't cook. It doesn't change.
No, forget the annealing part.
No. Isn't it creating?
No, it's no creation.
Well, it's changing.
We'll get there. No, not with an incandescent light. Again, you've got an element in there that heats up and glows.
So it's the heat.
That's the problem of a light bulb. So the problem is it burning? Is it cooking? Is it the final act of completion of an electric circuit of this kind? Those are your three choices.
All three. I like creating the best.
We have, you weren't here, but we have creating as a category, which we will see, molid, but that's a rabbinic category.
Okay.
And we'll talk about why it's not that.
It is a final act to the show.
Okay, but those are your choices. That's what I'm saying. You've got to look at it through their way.
I'm trying.
Because annealing, if it were even true, is not a malacha in the Torah.
But I got to believe there's people that say each of those things, right?
There's
arguing all three of those.
There are people that say each of those things, and there are implications to them being those things.
Are they different from one another?
Yes. There are three separate reasons.
But all of them are, they're all malacha.
They're all malacha.
So fundamentally, which one you choose, it's all still forbidden.
Correct.
But it has.
So what's the ramification of one reasoning versus the other?
We'll get there.
For different forms of life.
In fact, we'll get there right now. Okay, I just want to make sure everyone, if this is your takeaway from tonight, you get none other. That's why you can't turn a light on Shabbat.
An incandescent light.
Thank you. Good. Very important. Okay. So now, so we're going to cover now turning off the light, dimming and undimming the light, and then non-incandescent lights. And these will all be separate things. So let's start with raising the intensity of the light. So it's a dimmer. In fact, I have a dimmer right there, so I can do this in my house. So this is a separate issue from turning on. If you take the opinion that its kindling is the malacha that's forbidden, then it is forbidden to raise the intensity of the light, because, I forget who said it initially, you can't add fuel to a fire. That is a category of kindling that is forbidden. Adding fuel to a fire. We even talked about it last time, where you have the oil lamp from the old days and you pour some more oil in so that it'll burn. You can't, if you do it indirectly in a sense, it's okay, but you can't add more fuel to a fire. You can't throw another log on a fire. That is kindling, it is a malacha. But, okay, now comes the prohibition. If it's bishul, if it's cooking, that's the malacha. And you're raising the temperature, what are you doing? It's analogous to reheating food that you have cooked already. And there's a rabbinic law that says, lo bishul achar bishul. You can't cook something that's already been cooked. So you're allowed to do that, which is why, by the way, on Shabbat, you're allowed to keep food on a blech, because the food is already cooked. And you're keeping it warm, you're not re-cooking the food. You're just keeping it warm. Got it? So this is ramification. This is why this is so complicated and so hard.
So if it's kindling, you can't turn it up, but if it's cooking, you can.
That is correct.
Turn it on Friday afternoon and turn it up on Saturday morning.
That is correct. It's hard to be a
And
Jew.
Are there different communities out there that follow different...
I thought you couldn't turn it up. You had to lead it where it was.
Well, it depends on which one you follow. By the way, neither of these take into the hammer blow account. So I guess if we were doing our own halakha, I would think that turning up the lights would not be a prohibition because you've already finished the product by turning it on. So this is Steve's halakha. And I forgot to give my usual rejoinder that I'm not a halakhic authority in any way. Don't take anything I say as true. Ask the rabbi.
You thought we did?
I heard that Jonathan is following my psak halakha at home. Okay, that's turning up the lights. Now let's talk about turning off the lights. This is good because you're all going to be trained to do this by the end of the night.
We'll be certified Shabbos goyim.
Okay. If you want to produce ashes, the coal, the carbon from it, then it is biblically prohibited. Because it is biblically prohibited when the work is done for a direct consequence. In other words, I'm lighting this fire in order to make coal. But if your goal is to produce darkness, then it is only rabbinically prohibited. So I should just say at this point, biblically prohibited d'oraita and rabbinically prohibited d'rabbanan. As I said, rabbanan is a lower category. It's still forbidden, understand? But it's at a much lesser stringency. Because the punishment, I might have the quote here tonight, or it's coming up. Again, the punishment for doing malacha on Shabbat, I shall say, is death, or it is karet, which is the heavenly cutting off. No one knows what that means. It's you don't have children, you don't go to the afterlife. It's not quite sure, but it's a severe penalty. So these are big stakes we are playing for. So theoretically, you can turn the light off on Shabbat. If you need, rabbinically prohibited means this. If it's an emergency, you can do it. Otherwise, you shouldn't. That's your working definition. Okay, finally, last category, non-incandescent lights. Fluorescent lights work by, there's a noble gas in there, neon usually, and you pass an electricity, You pass a current through it, and the light ionizes and glows. Since there is no filament, nothing's heating up, nothing's cooking, it is not biblically prohibited. Got that? So incandescent lights are technically okay. However,
fluorescent.
Fluorescent. No, correct me, thank you, because I'm space cadet.
And you got the guy in the tape. Get confused.
Okay. Now, there may be an issue of what's called marit ayin, which is the appearance of doing something wrong. So for that reason, we usually don't do it. But there is a school of thought that says a fluorescent light looks nothing like an incandescent light, and therefore we're not going to mistake the two. However, not in this. We now have compact fluorescent lights, which do look exactly like incandescent lights. So marit ayin would probably apply.
Okay, so somebody passing on the street.
Let's really throw a monkey wrench. LEDs.
We'll get there. 1 second. Just want to finish the neon lights. So the, one other thing about the neon light that is problematic, however, is now you have to dive into the mechanics. Neon lights usually work by way of a ballast, which is something in there that stores a charge up that ignites the thing. And there are problems with the ballast. So generally, don't use neon lights.
Fluorescent fixtures have ballasts as well.
That's what I... Oh, neon and fluorescent means the same thing to
me. Okay.
And here might be an issue where you really have to look into how the light works.
Right.
Okay.
If you believe that the basis is closing the circuit, then it doesn't make a difference.
Yes, which we'll get to shortly. When we talk about appliances, I'm not going to say all about this. So I wanted to focus on the lights. Right, now, so Michelle adds LED lights. So again, LED lights have no filament. They're called lights. And theoretically, they're less problematic than fluorescent lights. I said it right. I was going to say neon lights. So probably there's no prohibition against using them. You didn't hear that from me. for, again, the same reasons we probably don't use fluorescent lights, generally we wouldn't use neon lights. Mm-hmm. But if you were stuck and you had to do it, it's probably okay. Now, on the other hand, going back to the categories, there would be no prohibition against turning them off. Because, again, for the reason of it's not cooking, it's not kindling, you are not extinguishing a fire. And extinguishing is a malacha, that is the opposite of kindling.
And also, you can't derive any benefit from turning it off.
You can. You're driving the benefit of darkness.
You want to go to sleep. You want.
I'd say you want to take a nap.
Yeah, but with the fire, you don't put out the fire because the fear is you'll grab. You'll use the ash. The ash, by the way, did have household uses.
Oh yeah, yeah. In those days, it did. But that's a category really that's gone now. It's just we are the heirs of this legacy of that's how things work. Okay, so the lights summary. Turning on or turning up an incandescent light is biblically prohibited. Turning off or dimming a light is rabbinically prohibited. And number three, non-incandescent lights are not really considered lights by halakha. Those are your takeaways from the light story. Okay, now we're going to get to electricity. Use of electricity if no heat or light is generated. And before I get there, a little discursus here on the side. There's two giants in the field of this whole attitude of electricity. And the first is the Chazon Ish, who's a man named Avraham Yeshaya Karlitz, who was born in Russia in 1878. He died in Jerusalem in 1953. He's called the Chazon Ish, you know. These people are usually named by the Hebrew words of the books they author. So that's why he's called the Chazon Ish. And he wrote all the initial responses about electricity. But the truth is, he was an old timer and he didn't really know much about electricity. So he became the standard. However, there was a very remarkable guy named Shlomo Zalman Auerbach, who doesn't have a clever name, who was born in Jerusalem in 1910. He died there in 1995. Now, both of these guys were black hat, long white beard, yeshiva, Orthodox, Hasidic kind of guys. Auerbach, I don't know if this is an urban legend, I've been unable to verify it, but the thought was that he was actually an electrical engineer by training, which would have been very unusual for a severely Orthodox man in Jerusalem, you know, in the 30s. But
Schneerson was, though, maybe.
Schneerson was, yes. So it's possible. And these two had a correspondence about electricity, and I believe the story is, and it may be apocryphal, that Auerbach wrote the Chazon Ish and said his mother had a hearing aid and could she use it on Shabbat? And Chazon Ish wrote back and he said, no, you can't. And Auerbach had already ruled that it was okay, and he was very distressed because he respected the Chazon Ish greatly, but he was distressed by the idea that his mother-in-law couldn't hear on Shabbat, and he would have to violate this man's ruling. So these guys are fighting, and this is the basic what they're fighting about, and you can judge for yourself. So the Chazon Ish wrote that closing an electrical circuit, back to David Yellen, was biblically prohibited because it was bonet, it was building, the malacha of building. And back to the lights, that's what he based almost all of his rulings on. And opening the circuit was the opposite of bonet, building, which was soter, or destroying. Right. And those are both biblically prohibited.
That's regardless of whether it's a circumferential sensor or battery?
Right. Regardless.
You're still completing the circuit. Right.
Now, Shlomo Auerbach disagreed vigorously with the Chazon Ish. And the truth is, Shlomo Auerbach was right. But, you know, we Jews have a long memory. We remember the past. So, why did he think he was wrong? Because he said the act of building or destroying, the malachot, must be permanent in nature. And electrical devices are built to be turned on and off. So they don't really, right, building again is building a permanent structure. We talked about this the last time. You can build with Lego blocks on Shabbat because it's not a permanent structure. At least some authorities hold that. But you can't nail two boards together because that will stay. So he makes the same analogy in terms of a circuit. And he says, electrical devices are routinely turned on and off at will, and the person who turns it on usually intends to turn it off at some point later, and vice versa. Building an item that is fundamentally temporary in nature is at most a rabbinic prohibition. And then he had another analogy, which is opening and closing a circuit is like opening and closing a door or a window. And that's not prohibited at all. And we'll talk about that a little bit more later. Now, just to get into next week, Auerbach's view has been completely adopted by the conservative movement. So you can already see where they are more lenient about these things. Okay. Now we go into part two, use of electricity. If no heat or light is generated, no incandescent lights, forget about the cooking and the kindling. So what are the possible pitfalls of turning on appliances? And turning off is a separate category once again.
Isn't there always some degree of heat involved when you've got electricity?
Yes. Yes, and that's going to be in here. Okay? So these are the possibilities of what could go wrong with appliances. Number one, creating something new, molid. Now, molid was a rabbinic category, which we did the sources for last time. So current flow is something new, right? There were no electrons flowing in a wire. You close the circuit, electrons flow. Is that something new? According to Chazon Ish, yes, it is. And remember, molid is not a malacha, it's a rabbinic, it's a level down, it's a rabbinic prohibition. Auerbach, though, disagrees and says that's only true in specific cases listed by the Talmud, and flow of current is not one of them, obviously. Number two, completing a circuit, boneh. Completing a circuit renders a previously useless wire into a functional wire, and that's analogous to building a wall. That's what the Chazon Ish would say. Also, you're assembling pieces into a useful whole. Auerbach says a circuit is routinely open and closed. We just talked about this. And therefore, it's not building or destroying. And his example is closing a door. And most halakhic authorities agree with Auerbach on this. In fact, most of the halakhic authorities agree with him on almost everything.
But yet they still don't use electricity.
Yes, that's true. Okay, number three, completing a product, makebe patish, which literally means the final hammer blow. The argument again is, the Chazon Ish, an electric device is useless until you complete the circuit, the final act. The final blow. Auerbach says, again, an appliance is designed to be turned on and off, and makebe patish only applies when there is a one finishing blow. Done. I put up the wall, I'm finished with it. And again, most people agree with him. D, creation of sparks. So sparks are kindling. Sparks are a malacha of kindling, they are prohibited. I think they're a primary category. The argument against them. First, sparks are created inadvertently. And we had a term for this, devar she'eino mitkaven, a thing that is not intentionally created. It's a byproduct. So we don't close a circuit in order to create sparks. It just happens sparks are created when this happens. Number two, if there are sparks, they're too tiny to see or feel. And number three, modern devices exist that are solid state and have no kind of sparking. Although, as an electrical engineer, there's inevitably a spark really when you close a switch at some point. I think you can make the case. They say that there is such a thing as a sparkless switch. I don't know. Again, Auerbach says this. Most people agree with it. Now we get into the more creative possible problems.
Can I go back to the spark?
Yes.
So the prohibition against driving, I once heard that you're creating because you're creating a spark when you turn the ignition on a car.
And spark plugs. You're completely correct. Spark plugs is the problem.
But if they're really incidental, you don't see them. They're a byproduct of the motor.
Well, you don't see them, but you know you're there.
It's not the byproduct. It is the act that makes the motor go.
But, okay, so this we'll cover next time again. This is the other big secret category of why this is prohibited. But if you could design a car that ran without a motor, sparkless motor, technically it would be fine. And the Israelis, there's a place in Israel called the Zomet Institute, and they do things like this. They are a halachic, technical organization, and they build things for the army that people can use on Shabbat, and they do have a car you can drive. But you're right, and we'll get to that when we talk about the refrigerator motor. Another argument, increasing in fuel consumption at a power plant. So now you know that's in the category of kindling. We're not allowed to add fuel to a fire. The argument here is that the fuel is being added at the power plant because you turn on your, I don't know, mixer.
I mean, somewhere at the beginning of that whole process has to be the creation of fire.
You can, but you there you could say the fire's been on before Shabbat.
Okay. Yeah.
Okay. Auerbach disagrees. First of all, he says the increased fuel need is an indirect, is a gramma. Because I turn on the mixer in my kitchen doesn't mean that the fuel plant in Elizabeth automatically starts pumping out more power. It's indirect. And tied into that is the fact that I may be turning on my mixer, but you may be turning yours off, so the net result would be zero, so you could argue we don't know at any time if the consumption's going up or down. See, people think about these things. So it's kind of random. And finally, outside of Israel, most power plants are run by Gentiles, so we don't care. Not that we don't care about Gentiles, but since they're not Jews, they're not submitted to any of, they're not, what's the word I'm looking for? They're not under this list of prohibitions, because it only applies to Jews. Next one, heating of a metal, whether it's the wiring, David, or the transistors in the circuit. Electrons, the Chazon Ish would say, electrons flowing through a wire heat it up. And by the way, this would be either kindling or cooking, heating something up. Auerbach says, the electrical engineer, wires get warmer, they don't soften, which is one of the requirements of cooking. And B, that it's inadvertent anyway. You don't turn on the circuit to heat the wires, you turn on the circuit to get the action of the appliance. And also, today there are a lot less wires than there were in the old days, and they're better engineered, so this does not count. And finally, these things are really okay, but Jews don't do that. And this is kind of true. Generally, appliances that don't use heater light, which is the definition of appliance for our discussion, are okay. However, you shouldn't do it because if I turn on the appliance, then I might turn on the light. That's the argument. And here, Auerbach, who's again, don't think he's a modern hippie, he's a very traditional man, says, the tradition is we don't use electricity, so don't do it. That's where we get to.
I like building a fence around the top of our own
fence. You know, but it's not explicitly building a fence. It's just like this is not a nice Jewish thing to do.
But it's also because our great-grandfathers in Auerbach's time didn't do it, didn't have electricity. They didn't use it.
Right.
So why should we use it?
Yeah, you're really right. So the bottom line is if you're forced to choose between prohibited actions, you try to use electricity without light or heat, because that's a rabbinic prohibition, not a biblical prohibition. And a really good example is, let's say someone gets sick on Shabbat and they need to go to the hospital. I'll put this as a quiz for the panel. Should you A, drive them in your car, B, call a taxi?
Depends on whether it's an emergency.
No, it's an emergency.
Then you do whatever's fastest to get them to the emergency room.
Well, okay, we assume it's the same.
A taxi you'd have to pay for.
Yeah, but the answer is taxi. Because the car will generate sparks, but the taxi only involves you making a phone call.
Because the taxi's already running, right?
No, it's just that it's a rabbinic prohibition.
I also heard someone talking about this once to whom it mattered. That you're fine driving the car, but as soon as you drop the patient off
right.
in the hospital, you have no business with the car. What are you going to do with the car?
Yeah. Yeah.
Well, yeah, it's also like they say, you know, the conservative movement, you can drive on the Shabbat to come to shul, but you shouldn't drive to go to the mall.
Well, but, yeah, but that, it doesn't go under these categories,
yeah.
Number one. And number two, they admit that they made a big mistake with that.
Yeah.
Not even for halakhic reasons, but for the fact that because people can't drive to shul, they'll live in a community. And
right.
you lose community when you let people drive.
Yeah.
And there's a lot of truth to that.
So how does this square with someone who will go in a car to get to shul, who will not start or drive the car to go to shul?
It doesn't. If you're really religious, you don't get in a car
right.
on Shabbat. Even if the conservative movement says it's okay. By the way, we could study that response if you want. It's interesting. The Israeli conservative movement does not permit it. It's only an American thing, and it was done in the 50s, and they now regret that they did it.
Yes.
All right, so all of these things apply to turning on an appliance, and this is a blanket everything. So you have the general rules. You shouldn't do it, but if you do have to do it, it's a rabbinic prohibition. And we'll get into specifics in a moment. Now comes the opposite, turning off the appliance. So, the general halakha is don't do it. The reason? It's not clear. That's literally what I got. There's really, what that means is, there really is no good rabbinic reason why you can't turn things off on Shabbat, except you shouldn't do it because it's electricity and we don't do those kind of things. And just as a general issue, it's again the potential reasons not to do that are the opposite of some of the reasons for doing it, which is one is the opposite of building, it's destroying. One is sparks again, when you turn things off, they sometimes spark, which would be kindling. And finally, instead of adding fuel, you're removing that, and that's mechabe, extinguishing, the opposite of kindling.
Or extinguishing, right.
Okay.
You say removal of heat, so I was getting
confused. Okay, so that's pretty much it for these appliances. Now, Shabbat versus Yom Tov, and here I got a quote. What's the difference between Shabbat and Yom Tov? And we talked about this at length last time, so I have the source here, so I wanted you to see it. Which was, this is a quote from Exodus, and the first day shall be to you a holy convocation. The seventh day is a holy convocation, in other words, a Shabbat, or Shabbaton actually. No manner of work shall be done, except that which every man must eat, that only may be done by you. So the rule for Yom Tov is everything on Shabbat is forbidden on Yom Tov, with the exception of the things you need to do to prepare food. That's the general rule. So as the famous saying goes, it is legal to slaughter a cow on Yontif if you're going to prepare it to eat. Now, in reality, the most important things are you can transfer a pre-existing flame. You can't light a new one, but you can transfer one. And you can add fuel to a pre-existing flame because that may be needed to cook. And therefore, on Yom Tov, because of those relaxations of the kindling rules, back to the incandescent light bulb, so now it's kindling, and therefore, since you can do those activities, it now only becomes a rabbinic prohibition, not a biblical prohibition, to turn a light on and off. And there are Orthodox authorities that say it's okay to do lights on Yom Tov.
As long as it's not on Shabbat.
As long as it's not on Shabbat. Also, the prohibition for creating a new flame only applies to wood, flint, or matches. None of these apply to heat or light through electricity. And finally, turning a light on is equivalent to transferring a flame because the flame already exists in the wire. That's their rationale.
But you said there was no flame in the wire when
it was electric. I did say that, and that's why this is a very difficult subject. Summary.
They contradict themselves to let you do what they said you can't do.
Most authorities prohibit, the minority allow turning lights on. All prohibit turning lights off. Even though I just told you that it's okay, that's the general halakha.
On Yom Tov.
On Yom Tov only. Okay, specific appliances. This is now the applied science version of the evening. I'll talk about these five particular things. Refrigerators. So there's two problems with a refrigerator. Class?
We're talking Shabbos.
On Shabbos. Forget Yom Tov. Back to Shabbos.
Opening the door lets warm air in, which causes the motor to turn on.
That's one.
I thought the light of the candle.
That's two.
So you have to unplug it.
Okay, so there's two problems with it. The light and the motor. Okay. There's no solution for the light bulb. You got to take it out for Shabbat.
Right.
Or tape the switch
right. Shut in before Shabbat. That's it. The motor is interesting, though. So, as Stacy just said, when you open up a fridge, warm air goes into the fridge, it heats up, and that turns on the motor on the fridge, and the motor is sparking. So, motor's a problem. Okay. Think about this now. If the motor was already running, you wouldn't have a problem. So that's a legal solution. If you hear the motor running, it's not a problem to open the fridge up. However, if you take Auerbach's opinion, there's no heat or light involved with the motor, so it's okay anytime. Also, the motor goes on and off, so there's no issue of bona, of building or completing the circuit. And I haven't written in here, but it's also a grama, right? It's an indirect action because opening the refrigerator doesn't cause the motor to go on immediately. It will happen after a period of time. And Auerbach has an interesting thing to say here about this, that it's not direct, therefore it's not an intended action that you want to turn the motor on. It happens with it. And he goes on to say, there's a reductio ad absurdum here, meaning if you take the logic that opening the fridge will heat it up, will turn the motor on, then you can take a step back and say, well, opening the door to the house will do that, or opening the window, or me walking into the room heats up the air in the room, and then that will have an effect. There's no end to the way you can take right. that, so let's not go there.
Yeah, I will also argue that, at least modern refrigerators, the motors are pretty silent. You don't really hear them.
But it's not the hearing that's the problem. It's the fact that they're running.
Right, but you said...
If you can hear it,
it's
right.
already running.
Right, you wouldn't
you
know.
You really can't hear a motor unless there's a problem with it.
Yeah, so the bottom line, halakha, fridge is okay. Without the light bulb. Telephones. Telephone involves five separate actions. Lifting the receiver, that causes current to flow. Not a problem if you're in the Auerbach school. Because Onish would say, that, you know, all the problems that go with it. Dialing is completing a circuit. Talking...
Only if you've got circuit switched telephones.
As opposed to...
Voice over IP.
But you're still initiating an electrical action inside the phone.
Yeah.
So you are completing a circuit. Some way.
Technology will save us from our own.
The opposite of those two things, holding the receiver and replacing the receiver, that counts as the opposite of building, that's destroying.
Right. When was the last time any one of us used a phone that had a receiver.
Well, you all do, except now you activate it by pushing a button rather than by picking up a handset. Mm-hmm. But theoretically, theoretically it's the same, but if you really want to dive into the halakha of how it specifics how it's working, it may not be. And the last one, talking, which is causing a noise to be heard, which we'll talk about in a little bit. It's actually two things there. It's increasing the current, which is a problem, and there's a problem with loud voices on Shabbat, which we'll get to. Okay, radio and television, same issues again. You can make an argument it's completing a circuit, it's increasing current, etc. Again, in the Auerbach world, we don't hold by that, so that's okay. The real problem with television or radio is the loud voice.
So Auerbach is still saying that all this stuff is forbidden?
No.
No.
Well, yes, he says you can't do it.
So even though he's finding reasons to argue against,
even though he doesn't think it's a melacha, he's still saying don't do it.
But he's saying it's rabbinically prohibited, not biblically prohibited.
So if you walk into a room where the TV is already on and the voice is low, you can watch TV.
No. You still can't do that.
Well, Jewish law, your Orthodox will watch TV on the Shabbos.
They
Jewish
won't.
Law.
I remember many who did. They would turn it on to channel whatever so they could watch the ball game when they got away from shul.
Okay, see, and I knew someone who wouldn't videotape a show that occurred on Shabbat because that would have been forbidden. And watch it after Shabbat.
Because you're setting it up for the switches to go on and off.
No, that we'll talk about that, actually. That's another category. No, it was just because you shouldn't do it.
Yeah, but the TV would be on before Shabbat.
See, I had learned you could do that.
It's like writing.
But
it's only okay.
No, it's not. Writing is its own category, which I may do next time. And electronic writing is even more. Then it has to do with storage. And okay.
So the most reserved on at night now after Shabbat.
Right.
In the old days, it was during the day.
Static electricity. Wearing clothes that will cause sparks that will make static electricity. You shouldn't wear those clothes, but if you do, it's unintentional, so therefore it is permitted. Right. And finally, this is something I've always wondered about, the hotel cards. So what's the problem with that?
Complete the circuit.
So again, it's the Chazon Ish versus Auerbach. You're either completing a circuit or finishing an appliance. Auerbach says neither of those things because they are transient activities that come and go. If you want to argue that it's molid, creating something new, that makes it a rabbinic prohibition. But don't forget that you can violate a rabbinic prohibition only, again, if there's an emergency, back to the sick person going to the hospital on Shabbat. Therefore, it's not a necessity to get into your hotel room. Therefore, you should avoid doing this. And if you have a mechanical card, that's okay.
Your key is okay.
It's not the electrical. No, I know there's the old ways there with the mechanical electric cards. These are all electronic. That would actually trigger a lock. So in general, you should avoid a hotel key card.
Then you have to avoid a hotel.
Pardon me?
Then you have to avoid a hotel. I'm sorry.
Correct.
Okay, there were hotels that had Shabbos elevators.
I was about to ask
that. I was just
going
to
say that. So you're not pushing the buttons, but the motor is going.
Yeah.
And stopping on each floor, yeah.
So you could argue that the motor is always running.
It's always running. That's
right,
what's going
it's always
on.
Running okay. It stops on each floor. But also a lot of hotels that cater to religious Jews, you can get a mechanical key instead of the hotel card.
Right. Which, of course, has problems with carrying, but that's a separate issue. I guess within the hotel, that's kosher.
Yeah, for instance, for men's club convention, a lot, there are people that will want a key, and the convention is all within the building.
Okay. Last issue of the night. Timers. So there are two... Oh, do I have this in here? Yeah, two timers. Okay. There are in the interest of time, I'm not gonna go through this. You can read it on your own. But let's look at actually the Mishneh Torah near the bottom. This is on page 3 of 4. The Mishneh Torah. It is permissible to begin the performance of a forbidden labor on Friday, even though the labor is completed on its own accord on the Sabbath itself, for the prohibition against work applies only on the Sabbath itself. Moreover, when a task is carried out on its own accord on the Sabbath, we are permitted to derive benefit from what was completed on the Sabbath. Now, you can read the Talmud, which has a whole discussion about this, and starting something on Shabbat, and, you know, before dark, and then letting it run. They give you an example of a perfume brazier, which would use to give clothes a nice smell, or cooking sulfur, or healing a wound. But the one thing I want to point out to you is, comes about 6-7 lines down, wheat may not be placed on a water mill unless it can be ground while it is still day. What is the reason? So in other words, right, you know, the old-timey, you have the wheel running and you put your wheat there and it grinds it up and it's running by water power, so you're not touching it. So why is this forbidden? And there's really two reasons. One is Rabbi Yosef wants to make an argument that I'm not getting into, but he claims that your utensils must rest on Shabbat, which I don't believe is normative Jewish law. Because it kind of makes, you know, you can't let your servants work, you can't let your animals work, so he applies it to utensils as well. But the other reason that's thrown in here, which I guess because the utensil reason is kind of weak, is the noise issue. So that if you put the wheat to grind on Shabbat, it will make a loud noise and it will ruin the tranquility of your Shabbat.
And which category of melacha is noise?
It's not a category. It's a rabbinic prohibition.
Very good.
And that's where you go back to the TV on Shabbat. Right. So a loud noise is not on Shabbat. And this is...
It just violates the spirit of resting as opposed to...
It may violate more than that. And that's what we'll talk about the next time that I said is kind of missing from all of this. We'll see. So I just want to mention all this before we do the timer. So there's two distinct issues with the timer. The first one now is it permitted to set a timer on Friday for use on Saturday? And what we just read says basically the answer is yes, you can do that.
Even if the timer is going to turn on your incandescent light bulb?
Yes, you can do that.
If people use timers.
Yes. That flies under the, you know, I start the work before Shabbat and it continues into Shabbat.
Yeah, exactly. I've heard arguments on both sides of it, whereas if you're doing something, setting something in motion purposefully that is forbidden on Shabbat, you shouldn't do it.
The point you can have, if you turn on an incandescent light before Shabbat and leave it on the whole time, that's
right.
Okay.
Right, but the timer, you're setting the timer before Shabbat, but the light itself then is being triggered on Shabbat.
Yeah, but you're not doing it.
Yeah, but people
it
do
Shabbat.
It. That is considered orthodox behavior.
It just, that one feels to me like you're violating the letter of the spirit of the law and not the letter of the law.
As opposed to a timer that every day goes on at 6 o'clock, 7 days a week, which would be permitted.
No, I'm just thinking if it's not okay to finish the switch and kindle the light, it's not okay to finish the switch and kindle the light.
You raise a good point, and I can't give you an answer. I have some notes here that I wrote down about this case, which would kind of go along with what you're saying is one of the reasons they prohibit the wheat grinding in the mill is because you might think that it's okay to grind wheat on Shabbat, which would certainly apply to the thing with turning on the lights.
And then again, how does your neighbor know that it's on a timer and that you didn't turn it on?
Right.
I forget the name for that.
Well, that's because most people, it's understood, are using the timer.
But not necessarily.
Let me put it this way. The general understanding is that it's permitted, but not everyone will use it. And there are other reasons here. The timer does the entire action on Shabbat rather than start before Shabbat and continue. Also, you might be tempted to set the timer during Shabbat. And finally, you can do this for an action that provides no benefit on Shabbat. The The final halakha is this is okay because it's an accepted practice. This is not a geometrical logic area.
Right.
The other argument now, the other question rather, is can you adjust the timer on Shabbat?
I would think not, once you've done it.
Okay, and you have to consider four cases. Adjusting a timer to make it start earlier, adjusting the timer to make it start later, adjusting the timer to make it stop earlier, adjusting the timer to make it stop later, right? All possible actions. The halakha is adjusting the timer to make it start earlier. The halakha is unclear. Adjusting the timer to start later, everyone permits that because you are only extending the status quo. You're not speeding up the action. Turning something off earlier is also unclear, but it's generally prohibited. And turning something off later, some say that is like adding fuel to a fire. Others say it is like shutting a window to prevent the wind from blowing out the candle. So it's generally okay. And finally, I leave you with the conclusion of this. Use of electricity on Shabbat and Yom Tov is a relatively new and exceedingly complex area of halakha. The variety of positions taken by decisors is broad, and these differences are extremely relevant to the conduct of observant Jews. It is the near unanimous opinion that the use of incandescent lights on Shabbat is biblically prohibited. Beyond that, there is little agreement. Get your Rebbe. You don't say you pick your Rebbe. You get your Rebbe. You follow their decisions. It's a difficult area.
And we didn't discuss the Shabbos Goy.
Oh, that's not electricity, thank God.
That's a problem, but not that season.